Here's a short music history quiz. What year did this first happen? You select a piece of music. You put earpieces in your ears. The selection plays after a short ad. If you said 1890, you are correct. Okay, second question. Who is the first singer to become a star because of their affiliation with a record company? Maybe you got this one right. It's Caruso. Okay, last one. Who invented the phonograph? Okay, that's a trick question, because as with the telephone and the light bulb and other inventions at the end of the 1800s, there were several entrepreneurs with their hand in it. Thomas Edison's machine was called the phonograph. Alexander Bell's was the graphophone. And Emil Berliner's was the gramophone. Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle. And this week, we're looking at the very earliest recording and music technology, and how it made careers and shaped music. Recording technology started easier than, say, the light bulb. Edison famously said he didn't fail 10,000 times, he simply found 10,000 ways that it didn't work. With the phonograph, his very first attempt was a success.
Mary had a little lamb, it's sweet and white as snow.
But you wouldn't recognize it today because it didn't work or look like today's records or vinyl. It was a cylinder rotating horizontally like a chicken rotisserie. Edison realized speech made a diaphragm vibrate and when connected to a stylus could make indentations in wax-coated paper. When the paper was run under the stylus again, the sound was reproduced, faint as it was. In 1877, Edison sketched his idea for a machine and applied for a patent in the following year. He sold it for $10,000, which is about $250,000 today. And then he turned his attention back to the light bulb for the time being. So in steps Alexander Graham Bell, who had the interest and the means to take the invention to the next level. He had a lot of money because he'd won the Volta Prize for the telephone. And again, $10,000 back then, $250,000 today. Edison had left a machine that had no clear purpose or any way to manufacture it. Recordings couldn't be duplicated, and plus it just didn't sound so good. So Bell's creation of the graphophone and the dictaphone, they were targeted at businesses, and they differed because the stylus engraved grooves into a cylinder coated with wax. They used a foot treadle, which was better than the hand crank. And he put a horn on it to help amplify the sound. It was just infinitely better. And the purpose and the practicality had a long way to go. The cylinder could hold all of 2 minutes, and both Bell and Edison envisioned businesses as their customers. Neither of them had any idea beyond a stenography tool. So the answer to all of these business questions was to turn to entertainment. Louis Glass, who worked at the Edison Company, found that if he installed coin-operated machines at arcades where people could hear their favorite songs, he could turn a profit. And this could be the moment the record industry was born. In 1889, the first phonograph parlor was installed in San Francisco and soon then across the country. In 6 months, one machine could make about $500, and that translates to about $30,000 today. People could choose to pay for a song or listen to a short ad before the song played. The public interest soon waned in these arcade machines, and the real problem was the mass production of the actual recordings. It was really low tech. They would have the artist stand in front of multiple machines, and that was the limit to the number of records they could make. Or the artist would have to re-record something again and again. Well, already you can see that there would be problems in quality control. This just wasn't scalable in any way. 10 years after Thomas Edison's first patent comes Emil Berliner, and he chose to record on discs, like today's records that we know. He called his invention the gramophone. So he had a good idea. He knew that entertainment would be his focus, but his discs still didn't sound very good. One engineer who ultimately partnered with Berliner said, "The discs sounded like a parrot with a sore throat." And that engineer was Eldridge Johnson. So we all know the discs went out in the end. Berliner and Johnson formed the Victor Talking Machine Company in 1901. Both Edison and Victor hoped to create lower-priced machines they could sell to middle-class homes. They already had 10 and 12-inch diameter discs, and soon one day someone discovered, voila, we can flip over the disc and record on the other side. To think that this is how innovation happens, really slowly. So there was no volume control. How did they control the volume? They would open and close the doors. Or my favorite, put some kind of cloth in the horn. And this is where the term, put a sock in it, actually comes from. It took roughly 50 years for inventors and their companies to iron out not only the technical problems, but to create industry infrastructure for the record business. And the limitations of the machines kind of determined the music that was going to be recorded. For example, in the opera world, customers were just rabid for recordings from the very start, but the range of the sopranos recorded badly, and sopranos were everyone's favorites. But the tenor range was more suitable to the range of the records, what they could record. So along comes Enrico Caruso at age 30. Caruso wasn't well known, he hadn't played in the United States yet, and he didn't have a reputation, and he wasn't in a position to turn his nose up at an opportunity. Caruso's range and tone were both well suited to early recording. He was also able to stand and sing a song again and again. The producers would bring the equipment to a hotel room in Milan, and Caruso made multiple recordings of the same song again and again. And it's said that Caruso made about $19,000 from those hotel recordings. In today's money, that would be about $600,000. Nice. So Caruso blazed a trail for superstars, and then other good performers started accepting recording contracts, because before they thought it was beneath them. Caruso's own career took off, and he became the first multimedia star, because his famous recording of Pagliacci's Vesti la Giubba made its way into a Paramount film. Victor also used his image on their ads, making him the poster boy for Victrola. So the machine actually made the performer in some cases, like Caruso and some other performers. And in some other cases, the machine actually made new kinds of music, like in the case with Louis Armstrong when he was in the studio with a band called the Hot Five. They were recording a song called the Heebie Jeebies. And the recording was going so well, Armstrong dropped his lyric sheet and he didn't want to stop. So he started singing wordless syllables. And that's how scat was first invented. A similar thing happened with the klezmer music. The dulcimer used to be the favorite instrument, but the clarinet recorded so much better. And now when you think of klezmer music, you think of a clarinet. The actual business of music took off when the phonograph companies took a cue from the moguls like Carnegie and Rockefeller, and they began to integrate their operations vertically. And by that, I mean they built the machines, made the records, identified the talent they wanted to record, they managed the distribution, the sales, and the products to their customers. So the idea of vertical integration is very common in business today, and it's different from horizontal integration, where you just buy up the competition, consolidating companies that do the same thing. No, vertical integration means owning upstream and downstream, the people that supply you, and then the people that you dispense to. If a car company owns a tire company and a glass company and a steel company, and if it also owns the dealerships, they have balanced vertical integration, meaning both upstream and downstream. Musicians can do quite a bit of vertical integration. They can have their websites for advertising, and they can buy their own recording equipment. They can make their own recordings. They can cut out the middlemen. So maybe you're a string quartet. You want to own your own equipment, have your own studio, create your own label, and maybe register a trademark. So now you can self-publish your videos, your albums, and your scores, and you can submit them to the Grammys. You have upstream integration. But as far as the distribution or the downstream integration, maybe you still need an agent for that, someone to promote your concerts, someone to get you the gigs. Or maybe you have a wedding business, and you can only play a handful of gigs in a given weekend, but by word of mouth, you could develop your business, and you can spread it out to other artists and take a fee from each one. This would be downstream integration. I'll dive more into the technology of music in some future episodes. For now, I hope everyone will commit to supporting live music and the musicians in their community. They make our lives better, richer, and deeper. Please do share this episode. Accelerando is now on Spotify. We've always been on Apple, but I hear that Google is terminating their podcast streaming, so I want to make sure that Accelerando is available on a platform for our Google users. Our world keeps changing, but we keep up. Have a great week. I'll see you next time.